Welcome to the Business Exam Room, a podcast brought to you by the company Doctors, where we share stories and tips that we hope will inspire, motivate, and help improve the health of your company. I'm Eileen Frayer, along with the founder and CEO of the company Doctors, Randy McKinley.
Thanks, Eileen. We all know if you own a business, you're always looking for ways to build your brand. Maybe you have a great background story to tell or advice to offer, and you feel you could reach a wider audience by writing a book. It's not a simple task, but our guest Ron Voller has some advice to help make the process a little easier. Ron is a writer, producer, and author. He's produced and created events for New York Fashion Week, Yahoo, and Bloomberg, and worked alongside Emmy Award winners and Tony Award winners to produce events in the theater industry. Recently sat down with Eileen to share his experience, more on his latest book, and how to get into writing.
Ron, thank you so much. We're so happy to have you here at the Company Doctors Business Exam Room.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, for sure. And you have done so much. You've accomplished so much. You are a writer, you're a producer, and an author, of course. And early on, you were a musician. You played in a band in Denver, Colorado for 10 years, and then you decided to pack up and move to New York City to pursue a career in writing. And what drove you to want to become a writer?
Well, I guess, music and literature were kind of we have been in a love triangle most of my life. And it just happened that I studied music and literature in college, and Denver University was the school I graduated from, got my undergraduate degree from. And the people that I met there, it was kind of a natural thing. You know, we were young and we wanted to pursue the music side of things. A good friend of mine is a world-class musician and songwriter, and I just fell into that at first, but I never really lost sight of writing. I was writing music at the time and poetry and reading a lot. And I think at some point down the road when I don't want to say mature necessarily, but you just get far enough along the road, you have to make other decisions. And I really wanted to pursue writing before it just felt right. And the timing was good. I was moving from Denver to New York, and I had been thinking about it for a while, and I was getting into other art forms. I dabble in sculpture and, just kind of shape form, just different ways to think about story, which is really what my world is about.
And your first published book was a children's book, and you were working on your second book when you were on a writing sabbatical in the Philippines, and you made a discovery at that time that changed the course of your life.
Yeah, I'll say sort of became my guide star. I had just finished writing and illustrating my first children's book. And I was on the sabbatical reading about the stars, which has always been a love of mine. And in our family, if you were in our family, there were two things you were always you had to keep in mind. One was the Chicago Cubs, because my grandfather was a pitcher in their organization back in the 30s.
Wow.
And he was in their minor league. It's a love story, basically. He fell in love, and in those days, you couldn't make a living at baseball, really. So he had to get a job. Was either going to be in baseball or you're going to be in love. And so, anyway, baseball was one, and the other was the stars, yes, but just the movement of life and the fact that you're on a rotating, hunk of rock in the middle of space. And mom, especially my mom and my dad too, both kept us apprised of what was going on. One of my earliest memories is the lunar landing. I was very young, and but I remember it because it was such a big deal. Got out of bed, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, I was in the Philippines and I was reading about the stars. I was reading a book on the Big Bang, which has always been of interest to me. And this guy popped out of the page named Milton Humason, who was an eighth grade educated mule driver, a cowboy basically. And he drove mule teams up this narrow mountain pass, 10 miles up a mountain pass, to help George Hale, one of the great astronomical facility builders of all time build this observatory on a mountain in California. And after the telescopes were built, he joined as a janitor, and after the age of 30, discovered this incredible innate ability that he had to photograph the stars. And he went on to help Edwin Hubble discover the Big Bang. Eighth grade educated, and became one of the great observers really ever, but certainly of the 20th century. Just a crazy story. But there was nothing about him. So I had to go in and dig up this, you know, try to pursue this very cold trail, because he was not he was a very marginalized historical figure before I got to him.
This kind of leads into your second book, or your latest book, and that is Hubble, Humason, and the Big Bang, where you look at the two scientists, Hubble and Humason, and what the relationship was all about, working and personal. And really, those two on their own could never have made the amazing discovery that they made. They needed each other to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. John Mulcahy, who's the director of the Carnegie Observatories, says in the foreword to the book that these days partnerships, there are still duos, but many of the partnerships you see, many of the big project work that you see can be done by dozens, hundreds, and sometimes even thousands of different researchers around the world because of the development in digital processes and so forth. But these guys were kind of a throwback of observers, and they really did. They really had the science world wrapped, including Einstein and his fellow theoretical physicists were just scratching their heads over what the information Hubble and Humason were bringing down was suggesting. And there were a lot of, Einstein famously wanted the universe to be static. And so he was searching for ways to do that and still get it to expand. And it really leads to some crazy stuff. But yes, I wrote the first book because I felt like Humason deserved a biography. I wrote the second book because I believe Hubble and Humason belong on the same page when you're talking about the discovery of the Big Bang experimentally using telescopes and photography. So that was kind of the impetus for the book.
This had to have taken an incredible amount of research.
It did. It did. I started the research. That sabbatical in the Philippines was 2004. I started my research in 2005, and the first book came out in 2015. And this book just last year, the end of last year. So 15 years of research culminating in a couple of books. Not bad.
That's pretty good. Congratulations on that. And I think for our audience too, who may be considering writing a book, because we know if you're a business owner, many, many times these days, at least in terms of your branding, part of that involves explaining what you do, or maybe your expertise, or sharing your story, and a way to do that is through a book. But it's not an easy feat. And maybe share some of the tips. Like, you definitely need to research. You have to know your stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. Curiosity is key to the whole process. I actually believe curiosity is more important than writing what you know. I think you spend a lot more time and are more dedicated to something that you're super interested in, which could be something but something you're super curious about tends to really unlock new things all the time. And you get, you just kind of get picked up, because the writing process is long, especially if you're researching. Leverage is a key. I used my, developing contact list. I introduced myself to a character's family. I interviewed the family. Now you have these layers of things. I was doing research near the observatory where he worked, where all of the information he gathered has been coalesced. And, so I was building these resources. And so what I ended up doing, and I think this is useful is as I developed my expertise in the field, especially in these characters, I started to reach out to various publishers, magazine publishers in my case, to see about doing articles related. And so that became, and I did, I published an article in a top astronomy magazine about this character, Milton Humason. And that gave me another step in the process. And so you're building this, you know, kind of, like I said, you're just building leverage toward the final product until by the time you get to the point where, by the time I got to the point where I was searching for publishers, I had so much to offer in terms of my track record that it really only took a couple of emails before I got a publisher to accept the idea and do a contract. So this, you know, this horror story about it takes forever, it doesn't have to, it can, you know, there's no silver bullet, but you know, there are ways that you can build momentum and help yourself in the final, you know, with that final stage of actually landing a publisher.
And so part of that too, you've got to know your audience. Who are you writing this for? Who would be reading it?
Yeah. First thing I always tell my writing clients, the people I mentor, is, you know, they come to me with stories all the time. And my first question is always, why are you writing it? What is the impetus for this? If you don't know that, you need to figure it out before you start. And it's very important, you know, some people come to me and they want to write, you know, religion's a popular subject. They want to refute some religion, or they, you know, want to express their, you know, support for it. And I always just ask them, you know, what is the meaning? Why do you want to do this? If you don't know that, it's very hard to continue. It's very hard to outline what it is you're trying to say, which is the next step in the process.
Right. I would think too that you need an incredible amount of perseverance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's like any other difficult field to get into. I kind of feel like I earned my PhD in nonfiction writing through this process. You know, the perseverance comes from the passion, obviously, and it kind of does sustain you through those moments. And that gets back to what I was saying earlier about really wanting to, you know, really being curious about a subject when you get into it. I mean, I cannot overstate how much impact the little two paragraph blurb about Milton Humason had on, and I can't really explain it other than to say there was no way I was putting it down. I was no longer pursuing children's fiction. I was going to pursue this until I knew everything I could about it, you know?
Right. And I was going to say, getting back to the publishing, like you were saying, you had kind of laid the groundwork ahead of time by writing the articles. So it was a little easier to get your book published. But for people out there that, I mean, that's a good tip that they should be doing that. But should they be getting maybe an agent, or should they be sending their manuscript directly to a publisher? Or what would you say?
Yeah, it's good to get into writing clubs, you know, hang out with writers, poets of all ilk, and just try to get, you know, just start having conversations and developing, you know, sort of a pipeline is a good idea too. And because when you approach agents, most agents are looking for people who have a lot of ideas, and they need to sound like they're pretty thorough ideas. So if you're thinking about an agent, if you're thinking about approaching an agent, take some time and try to understand or try to, you know, write down the number of topics or the number of subjects or titles, even that, you know, if you have working titles for a lot of your stuff, that really helps when you're approaching an agent. But yes, an agent, you don't need an agent necessarily to get a publishing deal. But if you have an agent, they definitely help not only with the deal, not only getting you the work, but getting you a better deal for the work.
Right.
That way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other tips you can offer for people that might be considering writing a book, or maybe they're in the middle of it right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's, you know, a lot of books are published every year. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, the market's saturated with books. There are a lot of people in the world too. So I wouldn't worry about that. I think if you have something to say, I think you want to say it. And self-expression is the one unique human trait. And I think our ability to communicate our stories and the stories we want to tell is really important, and you should do it. There are these days, back when I was self-publishing my first book, the self-publishing world wasn't anywhere near as attractive as it is today. Self-publishing houses can offer really good services. The one caveat to that is that a lot of the you know, the deals that seem too good to be true kind of are. So you do need to be careful. Products can look not very book-like. The paper cannot be very high quality. And believe it or not, I actually have people who come to me on social media and tell me how wonderful the product is that my publisher just put out. So it matters to people. And I think it matters because the market's so saturated with these small print self-publishing book publishers. So it's important to do your research on it. Get the consumer reports if you're going to do that. And in some cases, you know, especially with books that are meant for marketing, you know, if you have a small business that you're trying to, I'm doing one now for a woman who's a fitness coach and a bodybuilder. If your interest is in marketing to people, you want to attract more people to your service, you know, to help more people with whatever it is you're working on. These self-publishing print houses are very useful. You know, you don't need a lot of, there are fewer barriers to entry, obviously. And if you get with the right publisher, you can get a good product out of it and a lot more royalties than you get. The royalties are much bigger in that part of the world. They don't market you. They don't market you outwardly. The way some of the bigger, you know, I guess old school publishers do. But they do the online stuff is pretty good with some of them. So just do your research, know your genre, you know, if you're writing nonfiction or fiction and you feel like you just want to get the book out, that's okay too. You know, but do your homework and, you know, make sure you have the ability to build your own market. You know, most people can do that these days. So, you know, you don't necessarily need to go the route of an agent and a publisher to do this.
That's good. And what if you're just a horrible writer and you can't put pen to paper? Should you hire a ghostwriter, or what are your thoughts on that?
I don't see anything wrong with a ghostwriter. I think there are a lot of people who either don't feel that they just have a good sense of what the written word looks like, or they're too busy. You know, I'm running a business. I want to promote my business. I have a story behind my business, but I don't know. I don't know the first thing about writing in a way that is, you know, I'm a horrible storyteller or whatever that is. Sure. Yeah. Get a ghostwriter. And there are, you know, different services you can use. I would watch out for those services.
I was going to say, you have to do your research.
Yeah. There are some good services out there, but do your research on it and make sure you are, again, pointing the material in the right direction. You know, if it is really business oriented, I think, you know, small publishers, magazine publishers, self-publishers are a really good way to go. Because you do get a lot of, especially for small companies, small, you know, single sole proprietors, et cetera. I think that's a very good method for getting the word out about what you want to do. And again, social media just makes it a lot easier these days. You know, if you've got 10 plus thousand followers on Instagram and a new book, well, there's your initial market. You don't need, you know, Simon and Schuster necessarily. You have already a good way to get the word started. And if there's, I know several people who have in various environments who have really succeeded very well, very nicely with books that, you know, they've done themselves. One other thing I just wanted to point out before we move to another subject, if we do, editing. Another great part of the process and having a full publishing partner is you get the copy editing services. They really comb over your book. They work with you. I mean, the last thing we came up with for this book was the title. And it's because we were really back and forth about what the title should be, what it, you know, exactly, we were down to the word discussing how this thing should be worked out. And you're not going to get that with a self-publisher. You're not going to get the copy editing. So important
because that title is the first thing everybody sees. So you've got to grab them with that title.
Yeah. And the book cover, I actually, because I had already published with Springer before, they actually gave me a lot of latitude in helping design the cover. And I'm really happy with what they came up with based on my ideas. So yeah, that's very important stuff. And so I would say, if you have the means to get your book edited, by all means do it, because another flaw in the process of self-publishing is people aren't careful about what they write and how they write it. And so you get a lot of misspellings and people don't seem to care about that very much, but in books you get a lot of, I've heard people get a lot of complaints about the quality of the writing and the finish of the book. So just really important, you have to do all that work if you're self-publishing or have somebody do it for you.
Right, good points. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a lot on your plate, Ron, but you're also giving back, and that's something I really admire about you. At this point, I don't think you own a bike, but you're about to ride 500 plus miles to support a charity that's near and dear to your heart.
That's right. The Paper Fig Foundation is a public charity currently working in Uganda. That's, if your listeners can see me on this, where we stay in Uganda when we're out there. It's one of my favorite places in the world.
And that's the photo behind you. Beautiful.
Correct. Yeah, that's a lodge there where we stay when we meet with people out there. The Paper Fig is working on holistic empowerment. It's really focused on women's empowerment. We do a lot of community development. We've built a health center, and we've helped thousands now, young women learn trade skills that they can take to market and better their lives and their families' lives and provide health care and education for their kids. It's something that's near and dear to my heart. I was there before its inception and during, and I spend a lot of time on it in my spare time. And I was just searching around for big ways, big challenges for myself, and maybe trying to dovetail that with the group. So I came up with this trail ride. I'm going to ride 560 miles from Battery Park in Manhattan to Niagara Falls this fall. It looks like this fall.
Wow. How long do you think it'll take to ride it?
I'm trying to do it in 10 days with a couple of rest days. We'll see how it goes, as you said. Accurately, I do not yet own a bike. So I'm just getting started, and things are going well. I have a good team behind me. So I think I can get it done. I'm not too worried about it. I'm already planning a longer one for next year.
That's great.
Yeah.
We are going to be watching you and cheering you on and wishing you well. And it's really a great cause. And I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the Company Doctors Business Exam Room.
Thanks, Eileen. It's been great to be with you.
Thanks again, Ron. And thank you for sitting down with Eileen. Ron is also working on his master's degree in interdisciplinary studies at Johns Hopkins University. If you'd like to get more information about Ron, his books, or his charity work with the Paper Fig Foundation, you can go to Ron Boller. That's Ron, BOLLER.com. Well, that concludes another great episode of the Company Doctors Business Exam Room. Over the past 4 years, we have helped save more than 53 companies and set more on the right financial path. Whether you want to make more money, spend less, or trying to just make ends meet, contact us for a free consultation at thecompanydoctors.com. That's thecompanydrs.com. Until next time, wishing good health to you, your family, and your business.
The information provided is intended solely for educational and cannot be used as a substitute for professional advice and or information, as circumstances will vary from person to person and company to company. You should not act or rely upon information without seeking professional advice. Do not attempt any of the suggestions, actions, solutions, remedies, or instructions discussed on this podcast without first consulting with a qualified professional. The materials are not intended to be, nor do they constitute actionable professional advice. Transmission of this information is not intended to create a professional-client relationship between the company, doctors, and you.